Hello everybody and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. This week we're talking to Joe Parnay about emotional fitness and uncertainty. Joe specializes in emotional fitness and he helps people transform their relationship with uncertainty. So if this is something that you feel like you want to work on, this is an amazing episode. Joe's fantastic. You're going to love this episode. So as always everybody, have a magical week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast. Very exciting, as I'm sure you would have seen in the title. We do have a guest today, which is going to be very exciting, and we'll get to them shortly. But first, we've got to check in with the regular team, see what they're up to. So I might start with you, John. John, how's your week going, and what's been up?
Hey, Jess. Hey, everyone. It's good to be here. I think I've been recovering from last weekend, to be honest. My son decided that we were ripping down the ceiling in his lounge room and replacing it. So the body's a bit sore from holding things up and climbing into small spaces. And when you're 6 foot one and a bit, your small spaces don't sort of bode well. But otherwise, it's good. Yeah, just feeling the cool from the fake summer that we've had so far and looking forward to more warmth.
And John, as we last caught up with you on the last episode, you were in a vehicle heading towards a truck. How did that go?
Oh, yeah, that was just great too. I got to help unpack the truck and set furniture up in a house and then do several trips in the truck for my wife. It was fantastic. Just what you want to do.
Wow. Well, good effort, John. You should be running your own home renovation TV
no,
show.
No, I shouldn't like. No, definitely not.
Well, anyway, great to have you on this week again, John. Danette, how are you going this week? What's been up?
Oh, so, geez, I've had a great week. Was in Fiji last week, then have spent most of this week in Manly, and the weather in Sydney this week was spectacular. Done a few workshops, and the exciting news for those who've been following the chickens and the guinea fowl story is that we have a broody chicken that is sitting on some guinea fowl eggs. So it is likely that we will have some little guinea fowls in about a month's time. So if we do, we'll take photos and share them too with the listeners. So yeah, all good. And I love that we're all looking cold again after having warm weather. Oh, and the other exciting thing is we've now got bees back in the beehive.
Oh.
How exciting is that? That's just turned up. So very excited.
Great. Wowee, that's amazing. I also like that we've had John cold weather setting up houses. You've been in Fiji. That's
and what, the bees just turned up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would too.
Well, there's so many blossoms and stuff, and there's always bees in the garden, so they've moved into the hive. So they're going in and out. Looks good. So
pretty good.
How cool is that?
That's amazing. Cool. And Joe, how have you been this week?
I've been very well. Thank you very much, Jez. Yes. Well, it's been a big week, actually. I just come off the back of a couple of conferences that I had the honor of speaking at and landed back here at home about 48 hours ago. So just enjoying nestling back in at home.
Amazing. Well, I'm sure the listeners would be extremely interested in Joe. First of all, thanks for being on the podcast. And second of all, you've been speaking at conferences. You've had a great week. But beyond that, for people that may be being introduced to you for the first time, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so background is in psychology, sociology, way back about 17, nearly 18 years ago, I started my training business, specializing in the field of human behavior, specifically in emotional fitness, which is different to emotional intelligence, and we'll get around to that and we'll talk about that. Been married for 27 years. We've got twin boys, 15 years old. 2 years ago, we moved from Melbourne to beautiful acreage here in Noosa hinterland. And life's good. What can I say? And I'm a 7-time marathoner. There you go. That's it.
Amazing. Well, we're so excited to have you on, Joe. And I think also for people, if they want to jump onto the Spotify, they can check out the video of this. Joe's just looking happy. It looks like it was a great move, Joe. You're looking just sunny, smiley. It's great to have you on.
Oh, what's there to complain about, Jez? I mean, we live, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes inland from the Noosa main beach on 2.5 acres in our own private space. I mean, if this doesn't make you happy, then my Lord. And also the Mighty Magpies won the flag. So, I mean, really, what else is there to like?
That's amazing, Joe. It sounds like it's all happening there. That's it, exactly. I love it. Well, Joe, I'm sure that all of those things put together do increase one's emotional fitness to some degree. But I do think today you sent this this topic, which was emotional fitness and uncertainty, which I loved as a topic because I think it's what a great choice, and we haven't really touched on this too much before. So, Joe, I guess before we actually get into the conversation, I'll actually throw to Danette's question because I think it does kind of cover what I was going to ask anyway. So, Danette, do you want to kick us off, actually, and we'll go from there?
So, Joe, I've got two questions, but I'll start with the first one just because when I heard the term emotional fitness, I'm like, oh, I've not heard that before. So I'd love for you to explain to me and our listeners what is emotional fitness.
Yeah, so emotional fitness is measured by the quality of our relationship with uncertainty. So the mission of becoming emotionally fit is to transform your relationship with uncertainty. And of course, uncertainty comes in many different flavors, you know, pressure, stress, challenge, shock, surprise, trauma, you know, there's a whole, you know, adventure, you know, there's positive versions, dark versions, and everything in between. And it's really about preparedness, not in the logical sense, but in a psychological, philosophical, even spiritual sense, being open to what life can bring to you. And the other thing I want to add to that is that it's unfortunate, and this is just how it is, most people correlate uncertainty with fear. So most people's relationship with uncertainty is actually pretty ordinary. And there's a whole host of reasons why that is. I mean, human behavior is quite complex. But what's interesting about that, Danette, is that when we correlate uncertainty with fear, it obviously negatively impacts our relationship with uncertainty, our capacity to handle the pressure that's happening in that meeting today, or that challenge that we're facing with our son, or whatever's going on. But you can't see this because behind the screen here, I'm surrounded by all these amazing tall canopy of trees and just beauty. And not that I want to make John any more jealous than he might already be. The funny thing is that in nature grows when it meets an obstacle. And the obstacle is nature's version of uncertainty. And so nature actually teaches us in its incredible beauty that uncertainty actually correlates with growth. And growth is it's a perpetual need of the human condition, that everything is either growing or dying. Nothing stays still. Our businesses are growing or dying. Economies grow or shrink. Our skill sets, our relationships, our marriages, our whateverness is either expanding or dying, breathing out or breathing in. Nothing stays still. So the irony here, Danette, is that uncertainty is actually a precursory seed to all growth. So uncertainty is actually a requirement to live. And therefore, that's why I think emotional fitness is so important.
Joe, love that answer. And I love that bit about it is a precursory seed to growth, because obviously we're a training company like you are, and growth is so important and gets me out of bed every day. So my next question, because I never ask one, I always love to ask two, is what are some things that I or our listeners can do that can actually start to grow their emotional fitness?
Yeah, so there's lots of answers to that. So we'll pick one. Actually, if it's all right with the internet, before I answer your question in a practical way, can give you a bit of an overview of the, because there's five core focus areas in. So this emotional fitness work is based on my emotional fitness formula, which I've created as a result of the culmination of the last 17 years of just being out and about doing my thing. So there are five core focus areas, and then we'll drill down into a practical answer for you. So the five core focus areas, which are in order of poundage. So, of course, that means in order of importance or in order of power. And the first focus point or core principle of emotional fitness is identity. So, you know, and identity is, and this is what's really key here, is identity is what we allow ourselves to be defined by. And identity is by far one of the most powerful forces in the human condition, because we will do anything to remain consistent with how we see ourselves. The other reason why it's really, really powerful is, to give an example, Danette, if I'm defining myself by the results I'm getting in my career or the results I'm getting in my business, I'm going to become hypersensitized to whether I'm winning or losing. So if I'm losing, because if you're going to win, you're going to have to lose. Like, that's just the nature of that game. So when I'm losing, I'm going to be taking it profoundly personally, which then impacts my next chunk of performance or my next ability to focus or whatever it might be, right? So identity is that powerful. And unfortunately, or not, depending on how you look at it, there are a lot of people in the Western world, and we'll talk specifically about Australia because that's where all my work's been pretty much done, that they define themselves by the results they're getting. And not just results in their business, Danette, results in how are my kids going in comparison to the kids down the road? How is my home in comparison to this person's home? How am I living in comparison to these? But it's the old cliche of the Joneses kind of thing, keeping up and all that kind of stuff, kinda. But it's a bit more than that. So there's a whole thing in the emotional fitness formula about the journey, the four phases that we take in identity that actually leads us to a sense of peace of mind. And there's a whole thing around that that if we get time to explore that, we certainly can. The second core focus area is life stages. And by life stages, I'm not necessarily talking only about age. I'm talking about the life stage of the journey from ambition to meaning, the journey from egocentricity to heart centricity, the journey of selfish self-focus, which, you know, you can be functionally selfish and it can work really well, and that's really important. It's the journey from self to others. It's the journey from survival to contribution. It's a big journey. And there's phases, the identity phases sit in this journey from ambition to meaning. So your life stage is really important to know where you're at, because that will influence the third focus point or core principle, which is values. Because every phase of life, our values evolve, our priorities shift and transform. In my work, I define a value as an emotional compass, that directs us toward the right person, toward the right career path, toward the right lifestyle that's right for us. The emotional compass is something that we feel. And if we violate our values, our emotional compass will let us know. We'll basically feel very ordinary, emotionally speaking. And then our values also influence the fourth focus point of or core principle of emotional fitness, which is what I call emotional flexibility. Emotional flexibility. Now, something that's interesting to note there is that emotions don't respond to facts. Our emotions respond to the meaning that we are giving the facts, the interpretation of what it is that we're perceiving. And that's where our practical answer to your question will come through emotional flexibility. We'll circle back at that in a moment. And the final part of emotional fitness formula, the final core principle, is perspective. And our perspective, we need to have a very clean and healthy perspective to lean on in times of darkness, in times of uncertainty, in times of challenge. Because perspective is the purview of life. It is the purview, big picture purview of, you know, our philosophy, our overall mindset, our overall appreciation. So it's really to have a clean and healthy perspective, we need to discover how to gain instant access to gratitude and appreciation in any given moment. There's always something to be grateful for. So that's perspective. So you've got identity, you've got life stage, you've got values, you've got emotional flexibility, and you've got perspective. They're the five core principles, and then it runs deep within that, if that makes sense. So that's the macro view. And Danette, if you could please repeat your question.
Don't you love that? But firstly, before I repeat that, Joe, I love your model.
Thank you.
It really resonates, and it's always lovely to have models. And it's hard to show because we're obviously having a podcast and we do the video, but even just watching you count them off and thinking, yeah, that totally makes sense to me. I love it. Can't wait to read your book. So my second question was, yes, what are some things we can do to grow our emotional fitness?
Yeah, nice. So there's a couple of things. The first thing, and this isn't in no order at all, it's just what's coming through my head. So the first thing we can do is become a conscious inviter of uncertainty into your life, a conscious inviter. And one day I'll be more than happy to be wrong about what I'm about to share with you. And that is that I have found in my life so far that the more consciously and more energy we put toward inviting uncertainty into our lives, and I'm going to explain what that means in a sec, the less reason life has to bring uncertainty to us. Because one of my sayings in my book and in my life is, you know, if you're not squeezing life, life will squeeze you. So you may as well squeeze it, because if you don't, it'll come after you in ways that you don't like. Because we're designed to grow. Uncertainty, remember, is a requirement of life. So it's really, really important. So how do we become a conscious inviter of uncertainty? What does that mean? It means do things that stretch you. Expand your comfort zone. So I really want to make a point of language here. So it's not about getting out of your comfort zone. There's nothing wrong with getting out of your comfort zone. It's just that getting out of your comfort zone is unsustainable. But expanding your comfort zone is something that we can do sustainably, right? So, for example, stuff we could do, and this is just simple tips. Go and do an ice bath. That makes you really uncomfortable, but it actually expands your comfort zone. Go and do something that challenges you physically, whatever the expression of that is. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a runner, so I often will go and do like little micro things meaning, you know, most Saturdays, not all Saturdays, but most Saturdays I'll go and do what they call a park run, which is a 5 kilometer fun run. Now you can jog it, you can go as hard as you want. And I tend to go and do those as hard as I can on the day, because it's stretching. And it just, the spirit, the how I feel after that, not just physically, but my spiritual energy after that is I feel great, because it's like I've pushed myself beyond, or just, you know, on the edge of or beyond the comfort zone. Having conversations that need to be had, you know, embracing the courage that it takes to have that conversation with your father, with your daughter, with that team member, with that colleague, because they crossed the line with you about something. I'm just making this up as an example, you know, but they might have crossed the line and disrespected you somehow, and you've decided that you're going to become a, you know, a self-trusting, self-respecting human being. That's another aspect of emotional fitness, by the way. Which is inside the frameworks. And so you might go, you know what, I'm not going to confront that person, but I'm going to open my mind to the possibility of a different conversation with this particular fellow or this particular woman because, you know, insert reason here, right? So it could be things like that in the professional environment. You can become a conscious inviter of uncertainty by just going somewhere that you've never been to before. A country that is completely foreign to you, that you have no idea about anything of it. And it's just like being in a new world, because it is a new world. So you can do this on a macro level, on a micro level. Micro level, of course, is on a daily basis. Macro level is more big picture stuff. So when we moved, we were living in Melbourne all of our lives. You know, Sylvana's my wife. Sylvana and I we're both 53. And, you know, to move here at 51 with then 13-year-old twin boys, it might seem like a dream. Well, it is a dream. It's been phenomenal. But truth be told, we didn't know how it was going to work out. you know, that's a macro answer. So there's that part there. The other part I can answer your question with is that tapping into emotional flexibility is becoming aware of the role that we play in how we feel, in how we respond or react to a certain situation. So, for example, Danette, let's just say I sent you a text message 4 days ago and I still haven't heard back from you. What's the meaning I'm giving the fact that Danette hasn't responded to my text message? Now, the meaning that I'm giving it is going to influence quite strongly how I'm going to feel about the message, about you, about us, about other things. So I think practicing the meaning-making machines that we are, practicing with awareness the meaning I've given that particular person that looked at me that way or the way that that person greeted me, you can practice this all the time. What I mean by that is that our emotions give us feedback quite often, not all the time, okay, because emotions are complex and I'm giving you only one perspective, is that our emotions are giving us feedback on the meaning we've just given something that we just focused on a moment ago. So, for example, you know, Danette, you might be, you know, driving to work or going to work, and that you unfortunately meet up with a rather aggressive, rude, obnoxious person on the road, and you know, what's the meaning you're going to give that? You know, and that's going to, and this happens so quickly. It happens in a nanosecond, that the illusion is No, I didn't create that. It's just how I feel. It's like, well, Holland, you were just thinking about that a moment ago. There are two classifications of emotion. I'm only talking about one of them here because the other one is not as self-created. It's different, and if we get time, we can explore that. But so to answer your question, to sum up the answer to your question, become a conscious inviter of uncertainty as per the tips and bits that I've covered here. And the second part is become aware of how you're feeling in that moment about something you just experienced, because it's not the thing or the person or the event that made you feel that way. It's your interpretation of what you think's going on that's made you feel that way. So become a professional meaning-making machine. Not that doesn't mean you become a non-human. It means, well, hold on, how do you know that what you just thought is actually true, right? So hope that answers your question.
Yeah, love that answer. And my husband, Graham, actually taught me to go, if someone cuts in, maybe their house is burning down or maybe someone's been rushed to hospital. And I really like that because it instantly changes. And it's like, Lovely. Okay, let them go. Yeah. So thank you. Great answer, Joe.
Thanks, Danette. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joe. I've taken so many notes from that. Those some great tips there. Loved it. Well, speaking of uncertainty, let's throw it to John here. John, what uncertain question have we got here?
Should I be prepared?
Well, I am very jealous. I mean, living up in Noosa and having done 7 marathons, I've only done 1 marathon. So, and living in Canberra.
It's a mega achievement doing a marathon. Good on you, John.
But yeah, I won't be so jealous when the humidity hits in January or whenever it comes through.
In about 4 weeks.
Yeah, okay. I guess, like, taking away, and just the notes I've put down, you know, the only constant, and a saying I've got is, the only constant in life is change.
Mm.
So everything we do is dealt on certainty, but why do we look for that? Why do we look for certain when no one's got a rule book, or there's no book as to how my day is going to go or my life is going to go? And the other part of that is, how much do I need to take ownership for my emotions?
Mm-hmm. So was your first question about, so why do we go after certainty? Is that, was
yeah,
that the question?
Why do we want that great question. Certainty?
Yeah, I'll answer that and then we'll answer the one at a time. So we'll go to the first one. Great question about why do we go for certainty. So my take around this is that I believe that all of us are either consciously or unconsciously, mostly unconsciously, which means out of our awareness, of course, we are addicted to certainty. And now there's nothing wrong with that, because for us to be living in a space of uncertainty 24/7, it's chemically, metabolically, energetically unsustainable. You're just going to blow up somehow. So really, the way, from an emotional fitness perspective, the way that we, another avenue to improving our relationship with uncertainty is to have a balance, John, between certainty and uncertainty. And what that means is that, so one of the expressions of, one of the ways to meet our need for certainty, and I love this, is that I think it's really, really important that we all have some kind of ritualistic hobby that we do on a multiple times a week that sings to our soul. And there are different types of hobbies, John. There's some of us are physical. So I'm more physical because I love running and all that stuff that goes with that, the chemicals and all the hoo-ha that goes with the running. But some of us are not physical. That's a pure fact. Some of us are more intellectual. So you need an intellectual hobby. Some of us need a creative hobby. Some of us need a philosophical hobby. Some of us need a musical hobby. Some of us need a combination of all of the above. So if you're a musical sort of person and it really turns your soul on to go and play the piano or whatever it might be, then I implore that person to as a priority to go and get going and become part of a piano community, or go and get a lesson one-on-one, or do something. Because the reason that that's important, John, is because I remember in 2006 when I started my coaching and training business, I had been an employee all my life. I worked at Ford Motor Company as a rehab counselor, and I had other jobs and stuff out of uni. I was lucky enough to get a job in the psychology space coming out of uni, which in the 1990s was rare in Melbourne, from what I remember anyway. And so I for 10 years, I was an employee on the 13th of every month. Here's your salary, la, la, la.
Yep.
So certainty was taken care of for me. My finances were automated. Super was taken care of for me. 2006, I decided to start my own business, first time ever. And And suddenly, if this is certainty, this is uncertainty, this is the whole unbalance. I've got all this newness and unfamiliarity in my life. It was overwhelming, emotionally overwhelming. Many tears, many frustrations, many joys. Running saved me, John, because running is my go-to. It's my hobby. It's my ritualistic hobby. So I was part of a professional running group. When I say professional, we had a professional coach. I should be clear. I'm not a professional runner. But we had this guy that was really good. So every Tuesday and Thursday, I was part of a running community. Now, what this means is that on the Monday, when I was having a really hard day, networking and not where things weren't working out or whatever, you know, where's my next $100 coming from and all this kind of thing, I would think about what's happening tomorrow. So tomorrow's Tuesday. Oh, that's right. I've got my running group. Can't wait. Oh, that's going to be a release. It's going to be great. And suddenly I'm in, you know, for that hour and a half, whatever it is, I'm in a world that I know well, that's comforting,
yep,
that's familiar, that's beautiful, that's connection. I'm with fellow runners and people and stuff. And so having something to look forward to multiple times a week that's meaningful, that's a hobby and a ritual that's meaningful to you, there's more of you energetically to then handle the pressures, the stresses, the uncertainty that life will guarantee to bring you, because you've got that certainty to look forward to. So it's really important that we create what I call multiple avenues to certainty, so we can improve our relationship with uncertainty. It's a paradoxical statement, but I'm sure it makes sense. Well, I hope it makes sense, John.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. I mean, even within that certainty, though, I mean, you don't know how many people are going to turn up to run. And I'm sure every Tuesday was a different running track. The weather conditions are different. So this, I get, yeah, within, and I'm a runner as well. So,
yeah, that's actually a very important point you just made, even more important than what you made before, because what keeps the certainty juicy is the variety within it. What's that?
Yeah. I'm getting smarter.
Oh, you're incredibly intelligent. I'm very impressed. It's the baldness, you see. The less hair.
Yeah. Yeah, cheers. Learn something from that.
Sorry, well, Danette, it's different for you. You're an intelligent woman. It's different. We're just blokes, you know. But it's John, it's important what you just said. I'm getting probably out of bounds there somewhere. But The reason why what you said is important is because if this is our certainty, which is our running group or our music lesson or whatever it is, the importance of what you just said is that it's important that within that certainty there's variety, there's spice, which is an expression of uncertainty, but not in a scary way. It's an exciting, adventurous, variety, spicy kind of a way, which is really cool. Because otherwise, and you're spot on, John, if every Tuesday the session was the same, the people were the same, everything was on repeat, well, now certainty becomes boredom. And boredom can become chronic. And chronic boredom is one of the hundreds of roads that leads people into depression. So yeah, that's important. So that's, but it's the overarching angle of that is that it's something that brings us comfort. It's something that we know. So we need to have all these touch points in our life on a weekly basis that is ritualistic, hobby-based structure. So we've got certainty, and then around that we can go deeper into the uncertainty space because of that certainty.
Yeah. And for us, and I'll say collectively for this group, you know, coming together on a Friday to do the podcast is one of those ritualistic things that, well, I know I thoroughly enjoy.
But
we don't know where the conversation's really going to go, or, you know, and having a guest speaker come in and whatever else. But yeah, our ritual on a Friday to come together is like, it's the highlight of my week, pretty much.
Love it. That's so good. And it gives you something to look forward to, John. And when you've got something to look forward to, it raises your spirits. So let's just pretend, because I don't know what the day is ahead for you, what you're doing, but let's just pretend that at 11 a.m. or 12 midday today, you know that you've got a very difficult meeting that you have to navigate. And it's riddled in uncertainty. Well, the fact that you've got this morning sets you up better, clearer of mind, cleaner of soul to go and do have the conversation you need to have in that particular meeting, if that's what's happening. But if you didn't have this and all you had was just another morning and, oh, I'm stressed about this meeting at 12, you're not going to be as functional. You're not going to be as emotionally fit to handle that particular meeting or that challenge.
Yeah, no, and absolutely. And that's why my running is very important to me, because every morning I get up, do something, and it gives me that clarity for the day. It helps me start the day.
Yeah, indeed. Now, pardon me, John, cool. I can't remember your second question.
I was just about, and I think we've sort of covered it, but how much do you have to, do I have to take ownership for, like you talked about the meaning I give to things and emotional and emotions of that response, but how much of ownership do I have to take of my own emotions and of my own reaction to situations rather than, you know, they cut me off. It's like, how am I responding?
Yeah. We all have a role to play in all of the experiences that we have, good, bad, or negative, you know, good, bad, or negative, good, bad, or indifferent. And so this actually goes into another realm because it's like I mentioned to Danette earlier, there are two types of emotion. There's the emotion that's generated by the meaning-making machine in us, our mind, and what we make a particular experience mean will produce a certain emotion. There's that. But there's also another type of emotion. And this other type of emotion is very, very deeply ingrained in our neurology. And these are things like grief, like unconditional joy at the birth of your first daughter, son, baby, the unconditional thrill of your wedding day, or the unbearable grief of losing someone that you care for deeply. There's no thought that goes into that. Like I didn't have to sit back and go, what does this mean? The birth of my sons, how should I feel? Like, it's not a logical thing. It's an ingrained thing. So what's going to happen sometimes is that we need to cut ourselves some slack, because sometimes what happens is we will find ourselves feeling a certain way, because of more fundamentally deeper reasons. I'll give you an example, a more sort of superficial example, but nevertheless, hopefully useful. In 2014, the only international marathon I've ever done is the Berlin Marathon. 40,000 runners, one of the biggest marathons in the world, la, la, la. And it was the first time that I had actually traveled overseas by myself. I'd always traveled overseas with my wife or my family or whatever else. So it was a big deal for me back then. And so that was the journey. Spent 6 months preparing for the race. I was the fittest I've ever been in my life, all that sort of stuff. And I get to the start line of the Berlin Marathon, which lasted for, at the start line for a good 15, 20 minutes before they clicked the gun for us to all go. And in that 15 minutes, inexplicably, I experienced a profound sense of loneliness. I just wanted to go home. I didn't want to do this race. And every other part of me, all the other voices in me are going, what the hell are you talking about? You've been training for this months and months and la, 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 la. You want to go home now? It's like, and that loneliness, it took a lot of energy for me to overcome that, to just go. And the fact there's 40,000 people around you, you had no choice, man. You had to run in that direction. So now I don't know why. I wasn't thinking, what was I focusing on just a moment ago that made me feel that way? It doesn't work like that with these kinds of emotion. They're more profoundly deeper, entwined in our values, beliefs, and a whole bunch of other things that we haven't got time to get into here. But so I want to make sure that your listeners understand that, you know, there are two types of emotions, right? There's the profound, deep ones that are very almost mysterious. And there's the ones that we deal with on most days, you know, like, so how you feel about that meeting coming up at 12 o'clock is based on what you make it mean. It's not based on this loneliness I'm feeling at the start line of the Berlin Marathon, which makes no sense to me. So whenever we're feeling to answer your question, whenever we're feeling emotional and it doesn't make sense to us, go with it. Just, you know, you need to feel it and let it be expressed through your body and expressed through your conversation or whatever way you need to express it, and cut yourself some slack. The other emotions we're responsible for 100%. So in other words, our attitude toward that meeting at 12 o'clock, the meaning that we're giving and how we feel about it, that's your responsibility, my responsibility. That's the adult, you know, taking responsibility for that, if that makes sense. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I wasn't coming across to your listeners in the sense that emotions are really basic.
No, absolutely not. And it's interesting, the delineation between the two of those. So thank you for that.
Yeah,
that was great.
Thanks, John.
I'm Joe, as I'm listening to these answers, so many things are starting to click together in a way that makes sense, where I'm going, Because as you were listing all the different things, I like playing basketball. I like doing a bit of stand-up comedy, a bit of music as well. And now I'm trying to, as much as I can, combine those things, though it's not obvious how to combine basketball and stand-up comedy. But, you know, but like I have been doing some more things where I've been combining music and comedy. And even I'm finding that very satisfying because I feel like I'm doing two of those things at once to some degree. So that's me. I don't know. And it's creating that sense of discomfort that I'm also enjoying, you know?
And Jess, just before you ask your question, that's really important what you just said there too, because the more you allow yourself to access, you know, in your case, music and comedy, you know, combined even, which is just amazing, the more fulfilled and joyous you will feel, which means there's more of you to give to the people that you love. To give to the people that you care, to give to the client or to the, you know, whoever you're dealing with that day, that there's more of you there. And it actually adds to your peace of mind, right? So, but people tend to put, and this is going to sound however it sounds, but based on my experience, this happens more with women than it does with men, where they tend to put themselves last and go, oh, no, my guitar lessons aren't as important as, you know, insert family things here. Well, hold on a minute. If you want to be all you can be as a mother or a father to your family, you kind of got to take care of yourself first and be happy with, you know, stuff. You got to do stuff that is. So my running and your comedy and music, that's functional selfishness, because you're doing that purely for yourself, and it operates independently of all these other things that matter to you: your business, your family, your sons, your daughters, your this, your that. But without that, you're not going to be the same person. Like, it sounds extreme, but if I didn't run, I wouldn't be the same person. I reckon I'd be as depressed as all, insert swear word here. Does that make sense? So, and sometimes people go, oh, that's a bit extreme. It's like, well, no, because we need that. It's my healthy avenue to certainty, so I can navigate more effectively uncertainty, which raises another important point. Becoming emotionally fit doesn't make uncertainty easier. It makes you more effective at navigating the uncertainty. It doesn't make it easier, because otherwise it wouldn't be uncertainty if it became easier. It will become comfort. So, sorry, Jez, I interrupted your flow there, but I had to just share that.
No, it's actually great, because it's kind of inspired me to go on also a different path as well, which which it's reminding me of a lot of things, because I'm just going to throw some things at you, Joe, I think, because there's just so many things that I'm sort of plucking out of the air here. But one is, last week we were talking a little bit about how important, this is another way that you can kind of draw energy, is like, you know, when someone's really inspiring, they can inspire energy within you or within other people, within whole crowds of people, almost just through an idea. It's a fascinating thing. And this is reminding me a little bit of that with your emotional intelligence. You can just draw energy from doing something that you like. You can give yourself almost a battery pack in a kind of cool way. But well, what you were also talking about with the uncertainty, it reminds me, we had someone on the podcast called Callum McCurdy, who is neurodivergent. And he was talking about how sometimes people with ADHD can be really good in a crisis, because they're so used to different crises that in a crisis situation, they're actually the most level-headed, because they're so, sometimes, you know, they may have experienced some things where that has been a sort of constant. They're great people to throw into a crisis, because they understand how to organize things. You do this, I'll do this, and all that stuff. I don't think I even have a question. I've just got some different ideas to throw at you, Joe, because I think we're going to have you back on. We've got so many questions I don't think we're going to get into today. So we'll definitely have you back on another time. But yeah.
If I can answer that, Jez, what's interesting is that movie, Saving Private Ryan, you know, the one that came out many, many years ago. And I'm assuming most of your listeners have probably watched it. There's a scene there where there's all these, so the group there, the group that the movie focuses on, they're about to go over the, I don't have the right terminology, they're about to go over the thing and they're going to be shot at, right? They're about to go into the enemy. And there's the young soldiers that are flinching at every bullet and every bang and every noise. It's like, it's just, they've got no hope, right? And then you've got the other more seasoned soldiers that are focused, like incredibly focused, with bullets whizzing and stuff happening. You know, it's the same space of uncertainty, but different responses, because similar to what you mentioned about the ADHD, and I'm not saying that these guys are ADHD, but what they have is that they have been so exposed, like an ADHD, so exposed to uncertainty over such a long period of time that in extreme uncertainty, they're able to prioritize with clarity the uncertainty that matters less and the uncertainty that matters more. Whereas a person who's just thrown into this, like I'll say for myself, I'm not sure of your backgrounds, but I've never had any sort of that background. If you threw me into that, I'd be flinching at every single thing because I don't know where to prioritize my focus because everything is uncertain. Because the brain is designed as a survival mechanism to bring to our attention, hold on, that's new, that's different, that's a threat over there, that's coming toward us. What's that? And if all of a sudden it's like bang, 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 I can't function. But if I've been in the bang, 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 bang for a while and I'm all over the place, and then you put me in a situation where I need to like focus, even though ADHD, I know about that uncertainty there. I'm familiar with that bang. I'm familiar with that threat over there, but I need to focus on this threat because that's the most important one. And it makes me more certain, ironically. So it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. Joe, I also want to give you a little chance to talk about your book. So I'll jump into our sort of final section here and then I'll give you an opportunity to talk about that.
Sure.
So I might start with, John, any final thoughts you had on today's conversation about emotional fitness and uncertainty?
Joe, this has been really, really good. So
thanks, John.
Thank you very much for this. I've like lots more questions I could be throwing out there and lots more. I'd love to like have a dinner conversation with you. That'd be fantastic.
I'm open to part 2, 3, 4, and 5 and whatever else.
All right. To the pub we go. That functional selfishness, I think is very important. And I agree with you. It's, you know, as I said to you, I'm a runner and running's kept me, well, relatively sane throughout my life.
Yes.
And it's helped me through a lot of troubled, dark times where I've been able to get out and just put one foot in front of the other. And whether it's walking or running or doing whatever, but that's kept my sanity to me. So, yeah, I agree that there's got to be a degree of functional selfishness within your life to help 100%. You have that certainty as well.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, John.
Yeah. Love that. Thanks, John. And great question today as well. Great stuff. Danette, I'll go to you. Any final thoughts on today's conversation or emotional fitness and uncertainty?
Totally love the whole conversation. Definitely agree with Jez. You're definitely coming back, Joe. We love when we get into
this. Is that a threat, Danette? Is that a threat?
No, that's if you knew me, Joe, you'd know that I'm a hugger. I'm not a threader.
I love it. And love it.
People love my hugs. So you're getting
that was my attempt at humor. So
I know. Okay.
It could be a threat. Don't worry.
Yeah, you might be like, I don't want to go back with those weirdos.
No, I would love to. This has been so fun.
So I really loved so much of it. One thing that really stood out was that conscious invitation to bring certain uncertainty into your life. And I really loved that idea because I coach a lot of people and I notice when they're really flat, they're way more into doing the same old versus bringing a bit of uncertainty and bringing a bit of that variety into their life, which gives them that spark. So, yeah, great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Danette. No, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, and I want to definitely echo what everyone's been saying as well. I've taken a bunch of notes. And like I said, even throughout the whole conversation, things were clicking in weirdly out of nowhere. Old bits of stand-up that I'd forgotten to write down also came in during this. So I've just jotted those down as well. I don't know, very inspiring conversation in many ways. So that's great. Joe, before we go, though, we've got a couple things to ask you. First of all, any final thoughts on today's conversation? We'll start there. Emotional fitness and uncertainty.
Yeah, look, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I mean, to me, an intention of any conversation I enter around emotional fitness is always to make sure, hopefully make sure that, you know, the listener walks out with some practical tips, some, you know, knowledge about themselves that they maybe weren't aware of previously, or to understand more clearly why they do certain things. And so hopefully we've fulfilled that that goal here today. Look, your listeners might be curious to, you know, connect with this kind of knowledge. There's a couple of ways of going about it. Just so you know, Jez, by the way, my surname is pronounced Pane, not Pain. Pane. So it's no big deal. Pane is actually an Italian name. It means bread. So in school, I used to be called Joe Bread. So anyway, that's a fact. That's a true story. But your clients, your friends, your listeners can go to just joepane.com.au And on the front page, they can download a digital version of, I don't know if this can come up, our Insights magazine, which is an emotional fitness magazine. It's a bit blurry there on the screen. So this is actually a 44-page magazine. You know, 42 pages are articles from members of my emotional fitness community, people who I've personally trained, people with all kinds of different backgrounds, trauma backgrounds, leadership backgrounds, business backgrounds, who have written about emotional fitness for me in my mag. So that's a great free resource to start. There's also my podcast at joepana.com.au. There's a link there in the website. And excitingly, it's only taken me 17 bloody years, but I've finally written a book, which is not actually, well, by the time this gets released, it gets released on November the 17th. It's called Courage to Be You, A Guide to Mastering Uncertainty. I don't know if you can see it there. This is the first little copy I've received. And it's very exciting. This is pretty much in detail going to this conversation, but, you know, in all of its glory. So really proud of that work. And Amazon it. You can Amazon it. I'm sure by the time this gets released, it should be available. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Joe. I think everybody that's listening to this podcast is going to want to check that out for sure. Because I know I definitely want to. That, like, I've taken so many notes just from this one conversation. So that book, I think, is going to be amazing. Beyond that, I just want to say thank you so much for being on. Danette, John, great stuff. To everybody that's been listening, this podcast has been growing really nicely. So I want to thank everybody that's been sharing it. To everybody that is listening, I always like to say this as well. Have a magical week.